A1 Insights Podcast. Stay up to date with the latest trends in education and training from the leaders in perinatal nursing education. Here's your host, Sophia Navard.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to A1 Insights. I'm your host, Sophia Navard, and today's show is titled Virtual Nursing Education, Innovation for the New Normal. With no end in sight for the COVID-19 pandemic, educators of all backgrounds are striving to find virtual and innovative teaching solutions for their students. In the realm of nursing education, there are a few caveats. Nurse educators must now find ways to capture the in-person clinical experience in a virtual format while adhering to the specific didactic and clinical competency requirements set by their respective state boards. In order to dig deeper into the ups and downs of virtual experiential education, we are joined today by Dr. Joan Edwards, professor at Texas Women's University and director of its Center for Global Nursing, Diego Rivas, a student of Dr. Edwards, and Barry Dye, their former patient, who will share their insights from the teacher, learner, and patient perspectives. Welcome, Dr. Edwards, Diego, and Barry. We'll start with Dr. Edwards. Tell us a bit about yourself and your clinical nursing background.
Okay, Sophie. I live in Houston, Texas. We have 3 grown sons, 1 daughter-in-law, and 1 grandchild so far. We're hoping for more grandchildren. One of our sons, John, is a nurse who works in a step-down ICU in Houston. My initial nursing education was a diploma program when they were real popular. And then over the years, I've acquired a Bachelor of Science in Nursing from the University of Illinois, a Master's in Nursing, a Perinatal Clinical Nurse Specialist from the University of Washington in Seattle, and then a PhD in Nursing and Community and Global Health from the University of Texas in Tyler. My career has been split between perinatal practice, mostly in the labor and delivery area, and nursing education. Diploma programs initially, and then baccalaureate and graduate nursing programs. We've also lived outside the United States for a number of years, with most of my nursing practice and teaching in the country of Indonesia, the 4th largest country in the world, where I practiced and taught nursing in the jungles of Borneo at a 100-bed hospital and a nursing program. Since 2002, I can't believe it's been almost 18 years now, I have been a nursing professor at Texas Women's University in Houston, Texas, and I love teaching.
All right, thank you. And Diego, tell us a bit about yourself and your nursing background.
Okay, hi. My name is Diego Rivas. I'm originally from South Texas. I did most of my prerequisite schooling in the Denton campus at Texas Women's University. I started my nursing school at Texas Women's University here in the Houston campus. I am currently entering my senior one semester with hopes to graduate in May of this upcoming year, so May of 2021.
Awesome. Thank you. And last but not least, Barry, tell us a bit about yourself.
Hi, I'm Barry Dye. I live in Phoenix, Arizona. My husband and I just welcomed the birth of our first daughter. A couple of weeks ago. She's 2 weeks old, actually. I met Joan while I was an inpatient at Honor Health Shea. I was an antepartum patient. I was in for a PPROM for about 3 months before my daughter was born. And I volunteered to help some nursing students finish up their clinicals and be able to graduate. So I'm excited to participate today as well.
Thank you, and we're glad to have you. All right, now let's get down to business. We'll start with Dr. Edwards. Since the start of this pandemic, how has COVID-19 impacted your utilization of virtual education? And being in the state of Texas, what steps have you taken to meet your state's Board of Nursing requirements?
Well, yes, the pandemic has created a whole new set of challenges. We quickly converted all of our didactic course content to an online class format, choosing Zoom, which the university already had, and so that met our needs. Most of us as faculty were already using an online format for our courses. Texas Women's University has Canvas, and we had already used Zoom also, so our course didactic content transition was not a real problem. We utilize Zoom for lecture presentations, active learning exercises, and for visualization of off-campus testing, which we used a format called ExamSoft for that. The challenge became our clinicals, which were typically located in acute care facility women's health departments. So those experiences traditionally encompassed antepartum, intrapartum, postpartum, newborn nursery or mother-baby care, and NICU, neonatal intensive care units. In March, all of our clinical sites started to close their doors to nursing students in an attempt to limit patient and healthcare workers' exposure to COVID-19. So the National Council of State Boards of Nursing and also State Boards of Nursing were very helpful in making an exception for student-patient interactions during the remainder of the spring semester for our students. And they allowed us to go from 50% to 100% virtual simulation in place of clinical face-to-face patient encounters. However, we found out the end of April, the week of spring final exams, that this exemption did not apply to the junior two and junior one students. It only applied to the senior two and senior one students. Most of our junior nursing students had acquired enough face-to-face contact with patients during the first part of the spring semester in January and February and the beginning of March. However, there were some that had not gotten the 50% of patient exposure. So we still had 10 of our 106 students in the junior cohort that were minus 36 hours that they needed to complete. This made us start to creatively think about what we could do in the line of virtual education that could meet the face-to-face requirement.
Okay, thank you. And Dr. Edwards, what were some of the initial barriers to development? And can you also share the solutions you implemented to address any barriers?
Sure, I'd be happy to do that. There were a number of initial barriers, the most prominent one being that the typical clinical sites with face-to-face contact for patients were no longer available to us. The second barrier was we couldn't create an experience that might expose them to COVID-19. Remember, this was early March, so there was still so much we did not know and didn't want to cause exposure to students and or faculty with health issues or family health issues that would make them even more at risk. It had to be face-to-face experience where they could interact with patients. So it couldn't be a video that they had watched and then couldn't interact with a patient. It had to be live. Another barrier was how to do 10 students, myself and one patient, on the same date and time. We were dealing sometimes with different time zones with the patients that I was able to come up with. And for one patient, she was halfway around the world. And student work schedules were another issue. Some of the students, including Diego, he was one of them, they're working. They're trying to get some work hours in so that they can pay for their education. Another consideration was the need to meet the objectives of the course. And so this could have been viewed as a barrier because we had to include content that would meet those objectives. And then also the competencies we wanted the students to achieve, such as communications, caring behaviors, critical thinking, collaboration, meeting cultural needs, just to name a few of the competencies. Patient participants were accrued through my personal contacts, which included previous students who graduated from our program, nurses and midwives I'd met in the Houston community clinical sites, and people I knew through my professional network of A1, friends throughout the United States. Lastly, some contacts throughout the world, mostly focused on trying to meet the cultural competencies. Then we had to have a venue that would allow the students to have audio and visual access to the patient and also allow the patient to have audio and visual access to us. The virtual experience that I came up with was a virtual two-hour Zoom meetings with students and a select patient. The format went somewhat like this. The students would receive the schedule of two-hour meetings for each week with the patients. I would give them only the first names to so that their identity was not compromised in any way, and a brief history of the patient's condition and diagnoses. The student would then take that information and would review the patient's condition, looking up the diagnoses, typical care interventions, typical tests, drugs, risk factors, outcomes, concerns, and so that they would involve, that would involve 1 hour prep time. Now, this was content we had covered throughout the spring semester. So they were mostly just reviewing what had previously been taught, although there was some content that was new to them. Students would individually then identify 5 questions they could ask the patient based on what they had learned about the condition, diagnosis, and typical care. The session would begin with a short introduction of everyone and then a period of time for the patient to tell her personal story. The personal story took anywhere from 30 minutes on up to 1.5 hours of the 2-hour block of time. But the average, I would say, was between 1 and 1.5 hours. Questions were asked throughout the woman's personal story, but also at the end of her narrative, and then we would conclude with a time of reflection, discussing student perceptions and what was learned. The types of patients were broad because we wanted to cover everything as much as possible that we had covered in the class. So pregnancy with type 1 diabetes, there was another lady with lupus, chronic hypertension, and a history of HELLP with her first pregnancy, which is hemolysis, elevated liver enzymes, and low platelets. Another woman with a history of she was ovarian cancer, and she'd had several episodes of metastasis and then treatment that she had gone through with each issue of metastasis. There was another lady with a pregnancy with natural childbirth. She had had 2 babies at birthing centers, and one was a home birth. Another woman with a baby who had DeGeorge syndrome. This is the one I'm sure the students had to spend more time on. It's called 22q11.2 deletion syndrome. And she talked about the NICU journey and then the surgeries the baby had to go through. One woman was pregnant and giving birth and breastfeeding in the jungles of Indonesia. That got at the cultural part a lot. And then a pregnancy with a history of ectopic pregnancy, previous intrauterine fetal demise at 20 weeks, a preterm rupture of membranes, and she'd actually spent part of her pregnancy in prison. So that really gave us another type of discussion that we hadn't had with the other women that was very beneficial. And then there was a woman who was pregnant with twins, and another woman who had a history of breast cancer and then metastasis, chemo treatments, and was now on an experimental trial at MD Anderson, and then a woman with multiple pregnancy losses. So that gives you a variety of, or an understanding of what some of the virtual experiences entailed.
All right. And so what feedback did you receive from your university on these virtual experiences?
Well, the feedback was good. The university was very pleased with the manner in which we were meeting the 36-hour face-to-face clinical times. We utilized a venue that the students already were familiar with, so that helped. We were able to clump the scheduled dates and times for the 12 patients into a 2-week block of time, so it didn't have to go beyond the first week in June. The format met the State Board of Nursing requirements of face-to-face interaction with patients without exposing students to COVID-19. And the Board of Nursing was very clear that students must work with real patients to experience the unexpected changes in condition, the patient's reaction to illness, and the life stressors that accompany their illness or condition. These encounters provided an approach similar to telehealth, with audio and visual encounters, except they probably were for longer segments of time than most audio and visual encounters by healthcare providers. One unfortunate aspect of Zoom or other similar modality encounters is that they don't provide the physical hands-on learning experiences. However, they do provide every other aspect we always hope our students experience in a clinical environment, including learning to listen to the patient. When I shared what we had done with the State Board of Nursing, they commended us on being so innovative and actually forwarded my email correspondence with the lead educator at the board to the State Board of Nursing Education Consultants to share with other schools and universities requesting guidance on how to obtain face-to-face clinical time. as far as Texas Women's University's College of Nursing Leadership, I was also asked to develop an undergraduate elective course for women's health using the same format of Zoom patient encounters. So that has been done for future use, maybe possibly in spring 2021.
Wonderful. All right. Now, Diego, can you provide us with some of your feedback from a nursing student's perspective?
So going into this, we were all nervous about it. We didn't know what to expect. We went into this almost with a negative attitude. So we quickly had to learn what to ask and how to do things. This was a very great experience because we were able to see and learn a patient from a different perspective. We were able to spend almost 2 hours with the patient, learn a personal story, and we were given an experience that we're not given on the bedside. It was just a one-on-one with a small number of students, so it was very beneficial. I felt like I learned a lot from it, and we all took a lot, just learning a patient on a more personal level.
All right, thank you. And last but not least, Barry, what was your feedback from a patient's perspective in all of this?
Hi. So I think any kind of interaction that you have over, a media platform can potentially be really awkward, especially if you don't either know your provider very well, or maybe it's just an interaction with, like, it's a new experience for you, it's something you've never had to really worry about in the past. But I think being really honest about what's going on and really straightforward, if you can articulate what you've been going through or kind of your feelings about it, I think it's just easier to be able to kind of find a connection with people through those media platforms that we're using now. I've been using Zoom for work, and so I feel pretty confident going into a new experience with a new provider or even at just a new interaction with a new person I've never encountered before. However, it can be really challenging to break through, to find the connection in order to feel like you're being taken care of the way you want to be. And by being straightforward and honest, I think it is going to give you the fastest results as far as getting that patient care. That's the best part of having, an interaction with a nurse, is kind of finding a bond with them. So like Diego mentioned, having the chance to give a story and the background and taking the time to do that, I thought was so incredibly beneficial. It was really nice to be able to tell my story in a way that I wouldn't have if I had been in a doctor's office. It would have been a little bit more cut and dried. Same ultimate results, most likely. However, that patient-provider bond definitely grew.
Thank you, Barry. Now let's circle back to Dr. Edwards. How does this virtual experiential education compare to the in-classroom, face-to-face experiences with patients? And what recommendations would you give to nurse educators who are trying to develop a virtual education experience for their learners?
Well, we have brought patients into our didactic classroom in the past, Sophie, but only rarely. For instance, like with perinatal loss, it has always been a rich experience that the students highly valued. However, we seldom did this type of encounter because, as educators, there never seems to be enough time to teach all the content we would like to cover, and these encounters do tend to be more time-consuming. As we plan for the fall semester, we are purposely planning face-to-face patient encounters into our course for didactic and for clinical due to the COVID-19 environment, which is again limiting clinical patient contact in some of our traditional settings. The didactic Zoom encounters will be scheduled as they fit with the class content. For instance, when I cover antepartum and antepartum care, I will have a Zoom encounter with a pregnant lady. We are strategically planning our patient clinical encounters via Zoom with groups of no more than 10 students. This allows more interaction by each student with the patient. We feel that larger groups don't work as well to keep each student involved. The Zoom encounters with the clinical groups, though, are going to take a slightly different approach than what we did with the group that Diego was in. where each clinical group will have a pregnant woman. They basically adopt this pregnant woman that takes their clinical journey with them, and they will Zoom with that person each week as they follow her through her pregnancy, her labor and birth and postpartum neonatal period of time. This will vary depending on when the woman gives birth in the fall semester and how much she wants to share of her pregnancy and of her newborn. We're encouraging her to also have her significant other involved in the Zoom encounters if that person is willing. This will help with a holistic approach and the collaboration and care. It may also involve being able to be present for some of the caregiver visits if they are all in agreement that we can do this. And we'll just Zoom in for those visits too. One interesting aspect of this type of clinical experience is the intensity and the powerful depth of patient encounters that rarely happens in a typical 12-hour shift. Two-hour personal story encounters seemed to open a complexity and an intimacy of what patients felt and how they coped that just didn't come out in a typical in and out of the room encounter in the clinical area. We were all ears and eyes to only hear her story. It was amazing. And when we would get into some of the real individual personal topics, like for instance, how are you coping? And who's your support system? Who do you have there that you can lean on? That's when some of the very intimate questions seem to reveal really where that person was at and how they were dealing with either the pregnancy or the illness that they were in. And it was amazing. It really was. I really enjoyed it. So I would highly recommend to nurse educators, even if you are fortunate enough to have traditional or alternative clinical sites open to you for your students, to still consider adding some women to share their personal stories in either the didactic course content or the clinical time. We are getting some clinical time, it looks like, at this point anyway, for the fall semester students. However, we will supplement it with this pregnancy with one of the women that will follow in each clinical group. And I do recommend that the other instructors too include some preparation for the encounter if they use this type of encounter by the student, along with question development for them, because those questions help them to be involved more and listening more intently. Do allow for a period of reflection at the end of the experience for the students to express and absorb what they've learned. And this prep time and reflection time can be counted as part of the face-to-face patient encounter time, according to the Board of Nursing here in Texas anyway. And I think they're pretty much the same all over the United States.
Thank you, Dr. Edwards. All right, now, Diego, what advice would you give to nursing students who now have to participate in this virtual new normal?
Yes, ma'am. So as a student, when we got word that everything was going to go online, even me and my peers, we were all very worried about it. A lot of us aren't great online learners, and we were, to be completely honest, felt like we were being robbed of our clinical experiences. That's what we looked forward to with going in each semester. We look at what hospital we're going to be in, being on the bedside. Being a male, this is one of my only chances to actually experience the L&D side of things. Personally, I do have a 5-year-old son, so I have been the patient, but I had never been on the nurse side. So we all felt like we were going to be just lose out on a great opportunity with the Zoom program and the way Dr. Edwards set it up. We honestly didn't feel like we lost out on a lot. We were able to see and have a one-on-one patient perspective, and it was almost a little more beneficial because there's a lot of things we learned about the patient that we would not have learned on the bedside. Being able to hear a story and have time to do research and look up what we were going into was a lot different than any of the previous clinicals that we had experienced beforehand.
Awesome. And Barry, what advice would you give to patients who also have to navigate this new normal on the other side of the Zoom call?
Honesty, I think, is the biggest thing that people can impart as far as their patient care. you know, being upfront and direct when possible is really helpful, and being vulnerable, because it is a very strange environment when you're dealing with your health, but you're not in person. I do really think that building the connection through your story will help create a bond with your provider, regardless of if you've ever seen them in person or not. And that will help in the end, whatever your diagnosis or treatment plan or whatever the outcome of that patient-provider interaction is. So, you know, being honest, vulnerable, and direct is the best thing you can do for yourself.
Thank you. All right. Well, Barry, Diego, and Dr. Edwards, I want to thank you again for all that you do and for taking the time out of your hectic schedules to share your insights with our listeners today. And to all of our listeners, please note that this information is not intended to replace the guidelines that have been set by the CDC or a consultation with your provider. You may also visit our website at a1.org and click on the red COVID-19 banner for additional resources. As always, if you're having an emergency, please dial 911. Until we meet again, remember that we are all stronger together. This has been Sophia Navard for A1 Insights.